awfully vague to the point where they had to kind of do 2010, and then they had to write a book explaining it all, and so it it's open to interpretation. My sensibility was that the obelisk was left behind by something. It couldn't be left behind by people because the obelisk, apparently in Earth, for some strange reason, was on Earth when monkeys were throwing bones up for that segue of the space shuttle.
KC2FYJ.
Yes, Harry.
You're touching on one of my favorite films, and I can tell you a little bit more about it that might enlighten a little bit. First of all, the movie was written by Kubrick and Arthur Clarke. The book was written by Arthur Clarke and Stanley Kubrick. And the book makes things a heck of a lot more clear than the movie did, number one. And number two, the aspect of the monolith impacting the development of mankind was exactly that. They were supposed to be from some other civilization much more advanced than humankind. And the spinning patterns that you saw on its surface in the later scenes were supposed to be the monolith retraining the brain of the individuals that were seeing it. And that's supposed to have happened with the apes, which gets them to start using tools. And it's also supposed to happen with the human being being evolved into the star baby, which is that floating fetus at the end.
Okay, very good, Harry. I have a problem with a film where you need to read the book to figure out what the film said. I sort of understand that he was going for fantasy and symbolism and all kinds of fun stuff. But I just wish for the sake of the universe that material was somehow crammed into some aspect of the movie so you didn't have to read a book as well.
Well, you must also remember that movies are there for visual moving entertainment, and books are there for cerebral purposes to make you think, and they don't always mix very well.
Okay, I'll accept that entirely. I mean, but the problem is that eye candy, eye candy is a real problem today. I don't think it was quite as badly a problem back in the days of 2001, but now with the computer graphics industry basically pumping out make-believe films that you don't even need actors for the most part, I don't know. There's a little bit too much eye candy for my taste, but maybe I'm just an old cranky codger.
That would be two of us, actually, because I don't like the new movies either, mostly. Because books can typically depict events that the author wants to occur, that movies, even with the best special effects today, would be very difficult or expensive in order to portray, or because of the way the movie is shortened, that the events are summarized too much or too many things are cut out. For instance, you can have a book that's hundreds of pages and the movie's, 2 hours? So you don't have much time. So, even with the Harry Potter books, for instance, they end up having to split the movies up and so forth for the different books. So I typically these days will watch the movie, and then if I like the movie enough, I'll actually get the book and read the book because very often things are changed between the two. KB2IQN.
I tend to end up reading the book before I see the film because the book's available earlier and I'm curious about it. But, you know, I mean, that's a good case for large books. Although they did a pretty good job with Lord of the Ring, and that was a very big book. I read Lord of the Ring at least four or five times in my, you know, just because I enjoyed it so much. And the films were pretty good about, you know, they did cut plot lines and such, but not terribly. But, you know, with 2001, it didn't even start as a book. It started as an idea, then it became a movie, and then it became a book after, I think, it became a movie, but, you know, around the same time. So they could have, you know, moved things around and come up with something better. I realize exposition is boring as heck, and I'm sure Kubrick wouldn't want to put exposition in his movie like they did for Blade Runner. That was a terrible thing, all the exposition. But, you know, I would prefer if I understood the ending. I thought the beginning was good, the middle was fine. The ending, I was deeply confused as a child.
KFYJ with a correction.
Yes, Harry.
2001 didn't start out as an idea. It started out as a short story by Kubrick called The Sentinel.
Okay, but it was expanded into something more than the short story was.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I'm just saying that if they, you know, they already expanded it from, you know, it's more difficult to compress a story than it is to expand a story. So if you're taking it from a short story to a full-length movie, you probably have enough empty space where you can fill out something so that most people can quite follow what's going on at the end instead of asking each other, what the hell was that fetus doing there?
That's true. And again, that fetus at the end is explained somewhat better in the book than it was in the movie. Although I agree, if you're going to make a story into a film, the film should stand on its own 2 feet. At least that's my position.
Okay, so basically we both agree. I think the ending of movies, personally, are very important to me. I like to understand the endings. When I, you know, put in an hour and a half to 2.5 hours on a movie, and I don't quite understand what the ending was, that's either a big failure for me or the guys who made the movie.
Well, when the ending is unclear, I consider the film to have failed, because it becomes a big letdown. I watched this for 2 hours and I don't understand the whole story. That's a waste of time.
Yeah, but you know, up until the last, you know, 25 minutes, it was a good ride. I mean, it's not that it was bad from the get-go. It just kind of left me a little bit unsatisfied. You know, people still will talk glowingly of the movie, and like I said, there's a lot of stuff that was great, but I just remember my childhood confusion at the end, and that isn't a good memory to have.
Well, in my personal case, I actually had read the book before I saw the film, so I didn't run into those problems.
Okay, so, yeah, I guess I should have read the book first. Anyway, so much for movie criticism. I am AC2GS. This is the Limewark Radio Wake in memory of Dick, K2RIW, who became a Silent Key in April 26th of this year. And Dick hosted the Technical Net for 38 years. He wrote articles and web articles and did research and wrote patents and did all kinds of great things. And he touched all of our lives. by teaching us lessons about physics and radios and life. So if anyone has any further stories or remembrances or things that they'd like to say tonight, please hit that push-to-talk button and give me your first name and your call sign.
KC2FYJ again.
Yes, Harry.
I don't know whether that mentioned earlier or not, because I only joined well after 11 o'clock this evening. But I remember when he was leading up to TechNet number 1000, he would routinely announce, this is net number 983 the next week, this is net 984. And then when he got very close to 1,000, he stopped announcing the number. And I specifically remember this because I was the one who triggered it. I was listening to TechNet one night. He was getting ready to sign off, and I asked the question, when do you hit number 1,000? And he came back and said, well, actually, this was the 1,000th TechNet. And for the next 20 minutes, people who had just been listening were clicking on to log in so that they could congratulate Dick for 1,000 TechNets.
That's a great story, Harry. No one told me that story tonight. I know that Dick was very proud of the duration that he hosted the Technical Net. He would often explain that Johnny Carson booked less hours on the Tonight Show than Dick did on the Technical Net, and he was very proud of that, and he should have been. I marvel at how anyone could consistently do something like this for 38 years without any kind of remuneration, with a sense that they're doing something good, and that's all. So it's another way of judging a man. Most people are in it for the money or the fame or the power or the whatever. He was just in it for the joy of teaching and learning.
That's very true, and I think a lot of people learned a whole lot from his expertise and his willingness to share.
I agree with you, Harry. I think he was a object lesson. People kind of mimic behavior that they see. If they see brutish bullying behavior, unfortunately, they tend to get brutish and bullying. If they see people like Dick, chances are, hopefully, they will act somewhat similar. And the world is a better place because of that. Once again, this is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this radio wake in memory of K2RIW Dick, host of the Limark TechNet and so many other things. If anyone has any stories or memories or comments that they would like to share with us all, please take this opportunity, hit that push to talk button, give us your first name and your call sign. Yes, your audio is very low. I don't think it's noise. I think just the mic gain is down. Is it possible for you to raise your mic gain?
Okay, I'll stand by while I attempt to raise the mic gain to WAQEGT.
WAQEGT. Okay. What's your first name?
My first name is Charlie. I'll go back into the queue and just let me figure out how to turn this audio level up. This is WA2EGT on the side.
Okay, Charlie. We'll stand around. We'll wait. Anyone else have any comments or stories or memories or anything they think is appropriate in memory of K2RIW, Dick, who passed away April 26th? Please give me your first name and your call sign.
K2NVB.
Yes, Bob.
Yes, just to expand on what you guys were talking about before, how they like to debunk, you know, things that weren't credible. And I loved it when he, you know, with Paul on the space report, and he talked about the, you know, the ambitions of governments or people there, or people like, you know, whoever, these companies who want to put out the first man on Mars, and how he would just love to shoot holes full of that, all the different ways that that would be somewhere between extremely difficult and impossible, you know, and lots of details, often like people said before, even things like because of the pounds per square inch, real specific kind of statistical scientific stuff. And yeah, I just loved hearing him do that. And just in general, I loved hearing just his voice on the, you know, even if I, if something was over my head and my mind would drift, just the presence is almost like when he, I already passed away, it was just felt like a real loss in my life. And all I knew him was a guy I heard on the technical net for like 3 years. But, you know, I filled up my Sunday nights. I'd just be home and be like company. It would be like, I don't know, it was like a real kind of void when he's gone. It was like, I felt like I really knew him somehow, even though, you know, I just knew him through the net, like so many of us, I guess. So, yeah, just some thoughts there. Just wanted to share that. And my condolences to Chris and his mom. I'm sorry, I don't know her name. So, yeah, that's all I have for the moment. Back to you. This is Bob Key to NVV.
Well, thanks, Bob. Yeah, I mean, there's an aspect to radio, as I mentioned earlier, that I never personally met Dick, and yet I feel I knew him. I feel that you know, he was a very special person in my life. It's that commonality that you get out of radio that you don't necessarily get out of other types of medium. And you know, he becomes part of your time, part of your life. It's sort of to a greater degree than the olden days when people used to have favorite radio shows, and they would kind of invite these performers into their homes, and they would kind of think of themselves as having visited and such. And some women kind of get this strangeness about soap operas being real and such. But, you know, and the thing about Dick is that he was a genuine person. So you don't see any kind of fakeness going on. So he's been a guy who's been kind of calmly and pleasantly trying to tell you all of the magical secrets of ham radio for the 3 years you've been listening to him. And for other people like myself for the 9 years, and for other people for as long as 38 years or more. So, you know, we're all going to kind of miss that. It became part of our daily week. People, you know, Sunday night, they turned on the radio and they listened to Dick. And unfortunately, that's not possible anymore. You can go to amateurradio.tv and you can listen to archives of Dick and archives of Mel and archives of John going back to 2006. But it's not quite the same.
Yeah, I've listened to some of those. And Yeah, I'd just like to say, like, you know, I'm a musician. I work, and occasionally I'd get a gig on a Sunday night or some other reason I couldn't be there. And I would just, even though, you know, I knew that the mic would have that, I could wait 5 days and listen to it on the website, but I didn't want to wait. So I just tape all of these. I'm still taping them even now on my radio. And I'd turn them on and tape it, and when I got home, I'd listen to it maybe that night or maybe the next day or whatever. And, yeah, it just meant that much to me. You know, I just had to catch that tech net. So, yeah, that's all I got to say for now. Back to net.
Well, very good, Bob, for sharing that. And, again, this is very common, and I felt the same exact way. When I first tuned in back in 2011, I realized it was a unique experience. And I came back Sunday night after Sunday night after Sunday night, and that's that. But you know, that's the problem. Good things eventually end. New things begin. Some of those are good. Some of those are bad. But that's life.
Copy that.
Yes, indeed, Bob. Well, that's life. You have to play by the rules because you didn't set the rules and you can't change them. So thanks for adding that, Charlie. If you're out there, do you have the level up? Or if not, you know, we can hear you somewhat. Okay, once again, this is AC2GS, Roy, net control operator for the radio wake in memory of Dick, K2RIW. And we've been doing this since 9 o'clock last night. It's now 1:25. So I can understand some of you probably are tired and want to go to sleep, and some of you have gone off to sleep, and that's reasonable. But if anyone out there has any thoughts that they would like to share, any comments or such, please feel free. Just give us your call sign and your first name. Okay, we'll try one more time. I see Chris. Chris is a regular listener to the Technical Net. He checked into the chat room. I have the chat room open. I have the Echo Link open. I'm the only person on Echo Link right now. So once again, if anyone has any comments, any stories, any statements, or what have you, memory of Dick Nadel, K2RIW, became a silent key April 26th, please give me your first name and your call sign.
K2NVB with another comment.
Yes, Bob.
Yeah, one thing that struck me is the last few months, you know, I don't know what Dick's health problems were, but he must have had some of them like the very last times he was actually on the Technical Net, and I went back and checked the archives, and I can tell you that pretty much certainty that the last time he was on was like February 23rd. And, you know, that net, he sounded just as strong and healthy and clear-headed as any other time, even when I listened to some of the old ones from 2006. He sounded the same voice, the same, you know, it didn't show. And so, like, I guess we were all fooled. We thought, he's got a cold or something, but not for a couple weeks. You know, it completely caught me off guard when I found he was a silent key. Although after 2 months, I was starting to wonder a little bit. But I was just impressed by that. I mean, yeah, that's all I got to say about that. But it didn't show at all when he was on the net. Back to you, Roy. This is KD2NVB.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think what it amounts to is Dick could only give 100%. He couldn't give 99 or 98 or 72.3. And so if he was going to do the job, he would do the job right. And none of us would know what was going on behind the curtain. And it came to my knowledge of what happened as a shock as much as it shocked you. So, you know, it shocked all of us.
I could tell. Yes, it did shock all of us. I didn't mean to say it was only me. Definitely back to that.
Yeah, again, it's a testament to Dick. You know, some guys, if they could only do 50%, they would probably do 40% and save that 10% just in case. But again, I got the sense that with Dick, it was 100% or nothing. And, you know, that's a special thing. You know, some people can do that. Some people can never do 100%, unfortunately. And trying to get them to is just pointless. But Dick could give you 100% attention and information and knowledge and kindness. So I can think of no better testament to a man than that.
Ten to eight, agree. Back to you.
Thank you, Bob. Andy, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was just thinking back from all the nets and conversations. Dick always had a calmness, assertive confidence in his voice. He's actually like a radio personality. I just realized that I never really paid any attention to that before, but I just realized that like a radio personality, he had a very soothing, you could say soothing too, but a confident elicited confidence, and he had a confidence in his voice, and so on and so forth. Just realized that now.
Yes, yeah, he had a good radio voice. I continually think I have a terrible radio voice, but his was very calming and reassuring.
I think your radio voice is just fine, Roy. No worries.
Thank you very much. I appreciate. I still remember when I bought my first answering machine, and I recorded a message, and I listened to it, and For whatever reason, I was not happy. So I started to do impersonations on it. And this especially went terribly left-handed when I was an intern and a resident. I would do impersonations of the professional staff, the attending physicians, who all had their cute, interesting, little, strange ways of saying things. And I had to stop that one day because the emergency room was playing it on the overhead to amuse the crew there.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That would be funny.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah, I sort of thought it was amusing when the attendings would come up and say, "I understand you do me." You know, that's kind of intimidating. Attendings are always intimidating to interns and residents. Anyway, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this radio wake in memory of a great man, Dick K2RIW, who passed away April 26th. If you have any comments, if you have any memories that you would like to share or reminisces, please give us your call sign and your first name.
I guess I'll, since this is Chris, KB2IQN, I guess I'll August will add something.
Yes, please, Chris.
One of the things I'm going to miss is going to Hamfest with my dad. Was something we didn't do very often for a fairly long time. But when we did do it, that's something that really lit him up. Like it was something that he felt he really was really enjoyed. And later he was avoiding it because he was afraid of buying something and bringing it home and like not having room for it. Like he felt he needed to purge things or bring things to the Hamfest to sell and didn't want to have a booth. So we ended up, there were certain things he ended up avoiding doing that I think, you know, he may have regretted, like, you know, would have been more fun to have continued doing it. So, there's certain things like that I'm going to miss.
Thank you, Chris. I felt bad. I would kind of come up with these things to do on the Hamfest, and I would mention them on the technical net, and your father would comment that he's already bought way too much gear and doesn't want to buy any more. So, yeah, it's a shame. I would have really enjoyed meeting him.
Yeah, he was having trouble finding things to enjoy, especially with all this COVID-19 stuff. That was a real difficulty because it became difficult to, you know, to see doctors or really to feel like the comfort of going out and doing what you wanted to do. So that was there's just a bunch of things that I wish. I wish things had been a little different.
Yeah, Chris, I wish they had been different as well. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I am net control operator for this radio wake in memory of Dick Nadel, K2RIW, who passed away April 26th. If you have any remembrances, comments, observations, please feel free. Give us your first name and your call sign. Yes, Andy.
Well, for some reason, I guess I have questions, I guess, for Chris. You wouldn't ask Dick because you're talking about all these other subjects, but I'm curious if who his favorite, Dick's favorite comedian was, and did he do any voice impersonations, and you know, so on and so forth, you know, things like along those lines. I've never really thought about it before, but just curious.
Mozo.
You were mentioning you didn't like the sound of your voice, and you started doing impersonations, which I think I have done all.
Bozo.
C2NIG. That he thinks would be of interest along those lines that he may know.
KC2NIG there, Bozo.
George Carlin as a comedian. But my father tended not to do impressions. He would make fun of certain things, although not often. He had certain statements he would make. I think one of the things he used to do was something called spoonerisms, where he'd twist around certain words on purpose to make them funny. There were certain things. But yeah, he didn't really do impressions.
Okay, yeah, that's, you got the general idea. George Carlin, of course, one of my favorites. And if I was going to go watch YouTube, it would be George Carlin. So I guess we shared that. That's good to know. And I'm not sure if he. But would he actually tell jokes? Actually, or he wasn't. He wasn't a joke teller. I don't remember him telling too many jokes, but sometimes he was. There was some humor there.
He'd occasionally tell jokes, but they would tend to be repeat jokes. He would try to have fun, you know what they say in California? Later, dude. You know, things along those lines. I think humor was something that was, like, slightly difficult for him. He tended to have some sort of, I think you'd call it Aspie, a serious tone, like a light amount of autism or something, maybe, is a theory. So that might explain some of his focus. That's just the least from talking to others what might be possible. It may have nothing to do with it. It may just be that was his mannerism, but that's the way I think of it.
Okay. You know, he was, I was just trying to also remember, I remember back when I was speaking with him in person, pleasant, but still more serious side or focused side, but pleasant, which is good, actually. So, yeah, thanks for that. That's actually what I had in mind, things like that. Maybe it comforts me to know that we had something in common. I'm in good company. So anything else you can think of, feel free to let us know.
Well, one of the things that we touched on, for instance, tonight was, like, the cowboy hat thing when it came to going to the Ham Fest and the fact that he only wore it there, right? And one of the things that's sort of interesting to me is he'd be different. He'd be a different person when he went to the Ham Fest and was in the cowboy hat than when he wasn't. It's like something in him was very different. In his behavior, and he never wore the cowboy hat anywhere else. So it's like that type of thing is something that I see elsewhere. That there are certain I guess you'd call them triggering moments or events where people can be different for those events than at other times. And my father had that.
Fascinating. Actually, I was going to almost touch on that, but with me, I had bought a cowboy hat in Oklahoma 20 years ago, and I only, for the first time, wore it in public recently. I was on New Year's Day, I believe, and Christmas. But anyway, I can relate to that, actually. Again, thanks, Chris. That's exactly what I had in mind, something along those lines. And that's the only way I could find out or hear about this is now, because these are not usually the type of subjects we usually get into here on the radio. So that's interesting. All right, continue if you can think of anything else. I find this very interesting, actually. This is Andy, N2HUH.
Okay, Andy. This is KB2IQN. Well, there's a known extension of this. There's a number of people I know who consider themselves plural, meaning that they literally have multiple personalities that they can either choose or get chosen for them as they, you know, how they walk around. And that's one of the possibilities of what that, you know, that type of thing could be in some circumstances. And there are people, for instance, who are consider themselves polyfragmented, who they have over 100 personalities. That's where it gets a little complicated. Some people that have multiple personalities don't have shared memory between personalities. So when they have a switch occur, then the personality that's out can, let's say, make a mess, leave dishes. Personality B comes back, and now it's like, well, who the heck messed with all my food? And things like that. That's where things get very strange, where their behavior is not easy for themselves to explain. And the more positive end of pluralism is when there's like a shared memory, so that like personality A can make sure not to mess up personality B's relationships, that type of thing. I don't know if my father had any of that, but that's something I sort of like contemplate in the back of my mind sometimes these days, where it's like, you know, is this something along those lines, or was it simply the situation of him being at the Hamfest that led him to, you know, to be joyful and put on the cowboy hat, that type of thing. But I don't know, and I can't ask anymore. So it's just something that just now it's just sticking in the back of my mind as to, you know, what some of this was about. But some of this is fun to consider because it can explain some of human behavior. And it can explain some very tricky situations where people don't remember what they've done, or they've acted in very strange ways. And so it's something I keep in mind these days. KB2IQN.
Oh, yeah. Well, that, again, fascinating. And I'm not a stranger to that myself. I've been rather dynamic in my life. Nothing to brag about, just personality-wise, I've been sort of dynamic. People might say, well, where did that come from? But, yeah. So I might actually share a little bit of that myself. I'm not sure. Very good. Well, like I said, yeah, I thought I picked up a little bit on that when I met him in person. And a couple of people I had met, guy on cable TV, his name was Ugly George. He used to walk around with a camera, and usually he used to ask ladies to do certain things, but he was there at a Hamfest, and Bernard Getch was there at one Hamfest, and I was curious if you or your father ever ran into any of those characters or any other interesting characters at a Hamfest.
Bernard Getch sounds familiar. Is this the guy that was attacked on the subway, or is this the guy that, you know, ran some organization?
Yeah, Bernard Getch was thought he was being about to be mugged on the subway train, and took the law into his hands, so to speak, or defended himself. And I can't be sure of one of the occasions. I remember. I had asked somebody, I just met Bernard Getz, and maybe we can, I'm not sure if that was the father or not, it may or may not have been, but I remember I had actually said maybe, you know, as it was sort of like, you know, what do you talk to KTORIW about? What do you talk to Dick about? You know, talk about radios, but I thought it would be fun if get in a conversation with him and maybe Bernard Goetz or something like that along those lines. But I was wondering if you ever ran into any characters at the Hamfest and how that went.
Well, let's see. He used to run into a whole bunch of people at the Hamfest, but no one famous. I don't think we ever ran into Bernard Goetz at a Hamfest, and we talked about him because for some reason, I don't remember exactly what. There was a bunch of controversy about Bernard Goetz at the time, so we had talked about it, but I don't think we ever ran into him that I can remember. There were a bunch of well-known hams that we'd run into at the Hamfest, though, that would be like we'd see at field day events, for instance, because most of, like, you'd see hams that were selling gear, for instance, at the booths that they'd have to sell some, like, used gear. So we'd be talking to a whole lot of people. It was always a social event at the Hamfest because you'd always know a dozen or 20 people. So there was no end of conversation at those events. there were always like, you know, through the years, like routinely interesting calls that my father would get on the phone from various people for various reasons. Some of them would be commercial related. Some of them would be help with antenna design from, like, you know, from somebody, or, you know, there'd be all kinds of calls. Sometimes they'd be a little bit, but not very many social calls. This is something else that was sort of interesting with my father, is he was technical enough where the technical conversations were his social outlet. And so if those calls didn't get made, then he didn't really have much other social interaction with people. Let me drop for a second. So that was his method of being social. It's something that he really enjoyed. So, for instance, the TechNet for him, that was really one of his better social events. That's something he really enjoyed, and he really agonized about, you know, not being able to do it, not feeling healthy enough to actually do the TechNet. So that was a big, you know, like, draw. He really wanted to get back to it if he could. But trying to think of other people, there were always, through the years, like, a long list of names that my father would know, like engineers that he would keep in his mind. And so I've got, like, you know, somewhere in the back of my mind, I've got programmed a whole list of, like, you know, names of people and call letters. But like my father, I'm not terribly good with names. So this is an area in which I would probably find difficult to try to ramble up, you know, names that you might know. KB2IQN.
You know, also very interesting. I know he definitely liked the subject. It's quite incredible to be doing that. The dedication to the TechNet for so many years on every Sunday, but yes, he did derive a lot of pleasure out of that, and that makes sense. Yeah, that's good. He stuck with it that long, and these are all technical subjects. I'm actually another missed opportunity. I did meet him, but I should have asked him advice on getting along with women or something along those lines, or how to get a date or something. That would have been interesting. That would have been a chance to either get serious or make a joke, and that would have been it. But oh, that would have been funny. Oh well, none of this opportunity. Very good. Very good. Again, this is Andy N2HH, and I should give it back to Roy, but I'll be here and listening. Fascinating.
Hey, C2RFM.
Yes, Alan.
And I only meant to listen another few minutes and then shut the radio off after a long, long day, but I find I just can't. And Chris is sharing a lot about his father. And I have questions because he sort of is like a celebrity, and I have questions that come to mind that maybe Chris, you wouldn't mind answering. And if you do, by all means, don't. But I have a few questions. They're pretty simple questions. Like, I always wondered, was your father using a hand mic when he spoke, or, you know, was it a base station mic? Was he fully dressed? Was he wearing slippers? Did he you know, talk in his bathrobe? You know, is he drinking coffee while he talked on the TechNet? You know, these little subtleties I'm only thinking of now, but I guess I've always sort of wondered them from time to time. And you were right there.
Well, okay, so when it comes to the mic, at the moment I'm using the same radio my father would use for the TechNet, and it's a handheld mic at the moment. But over the years, he's used various mics, sometimes base station mics, sometimes handheld mics, so that's not something that was stable. My father has never drank coffee in his life that I know of. He avoided it like the plague. I personally love coffee, but he avoided it. He would never drink alcohol either. He would maybe have like on the order of half a beer a year kind of a thing. Never touched it. Never smoked in his whole life. He tended to always wear short sleeve college shirts. Never, ever long sleeve shirts. Why? I don't know. For whatever reason, when I went to work, I preferred long sleeve shirts, and I didn't like short sleeve shirts. I tried them, don't like them. So this is where, you know, there's a whole bunch of short sleeves college shirts, and basically they all need to go somewhere. I don't remember if he specifically dressed a certain way to do the TechNet, but I could imagine him doing the TechNet in pajamas if he wanted to. I don't remember him ever doing it, though. I mean, obviously you could, but I don't remember him ever doing it. I always remember him, like, dressed normally, if you will. So, not that it matters, but, yeah. Back to you. This is KB2IQN.
Right. Would he make sure to eat dinner at a certain time before the TechNet, or would he eat during the TechNet? Would he always be sitting in the chair while he was pontificating, or is there a couch in the room he might lay out on for a few minutes and then go back to the microphone, which is something I do, by the way, from time to time. That sort of thing?
In the ham room, which is my father's, like, you know, my father took over one of the bedrooms for the radio room. So the radio room is in the corner of the house where all the cables go out to the backyard towards the tower. And there are two temporary tables that all the radios are on. And he always had a legal pad or some type of a yellow pad with today's, like, notes for the TechNet. And it wasn't notes prepared for the TechNet. It was notes that he would take as the TechNet. So this is how he'd always know what the next TechNet number was, is he'd, like, writing down, like, you know, the next set of notes is for TechNet number 1,200, so forth. There's no couch in here. He would always sit at a swivel chair with wheels and do the TechNet from that. He would always have dinner beforehand, at least, you know, he'd try to do that beforehand. So, and the ritual for Sunday was to watch 60 Minutes while having dinner in the living room on a couch, and then coming here after sharpening pencils. That was another ritual right before doing the TechNet, was to sharpen pencils, because he always used sharpened pencils rather than the mechanical.
Aha. And now, when you were both on the TechNet, were you also sitting in the ham room, or were you able to have a setup somewhere else in the house?
There is no other chair and no other place to sit in the ham room. There's no room to have two people in here. So I would basically, if I was to use the same radio, I would have to stand nearby and, like, sort of temporarily take the mic. The only other radio set up in the house would be a handheld, and the power output of the handheld and the transmission ability for the handheld is very limited. So I would be at a pretty big disadvantage doing that. Most of the time when I would get on the TechNet, it would be from my car. It would usually be on a trip, like, in between here and where I was living upstate, up in Middletown at the time, which is 100 miles away. So if I was somewhere in the New York City area, I could easily make the TechNet. If I was all the way up, you know, let's say up in Westchester, I could probably make the TechNet. But if it was all the way up in Middletown, I wouldn't make it, and I couldn't hear it anymore. And so it was, and we were always, like, trying to figure out some, like, Yagi or power output or some type of way of getting enough gain for me to make the TechNet from where I was living upstate at the time. So that's more often where I've been sort of sporadic, and that's why. KB2IQN, back to you.
Were there times where he dreaded the TechNet because he knew he was, you know, he'd have to basically run the whole show? And I imagine he burned a lot of calories with all the thinking he would have to do, almost like a job, you know. Did he ever express times he goes, I got to do it, but I'm really not in the mood?
I think the only times he ever felt like that were times in which he enjoyed doing the TechNet. So it was more like the only time he would feel a little bit of dread is when it interfered with something else that was also compelling, like some family event, or if let's say we were about to go on, we were trying to, let's say, schedule to go on a vacation or something. And it's like, well, when, what am I going to do about the TechNet? So it was sort of like he felt tied to the radio in some cases. And in some cases, in a lot of cases, I think he put off taking a vacation, like other people have brought up. Like, you know, they've asked, like, hey, you know, did this guy ever take a vacation? For the last few years, no, not at all, nothing. We talked at some point about going on a cruise with the family, and we never actually did it. And when we were kids, we used to go skiing together. But that was a long time ago. So it's probably been 20 years since he actually took any kind of vacation. And so the TechNet for him sort of was a vacation, if you will. It was sort of like it was something he really enjoyed doing. It was something he felt tied to and felt compelled to do in some ways, but it was for good reason. It was something he enjoyed.
So, Dick skied?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Was that a question?
Yeah, I'm asking, he skied?
I didn't understand. I missed the word.
You said you went skiing. Dick skied.
Yes, long ago he used to ski. He also used to bike ride, and we also used to fly our radio control planes together. He used to really like flying gliders with something called the High Start, which is like essentially a really long surgical tubing that when you stretch, it's sort of like uses like a rubber band in order to launch the glider up in the air really far. And we got good enough where we could fly the plane and actually land it in our hand, Both he and I bolted that long ago. But later on, he had fairly bad cataracts, and so he was losing both visual acuity as well as color. And so, we tried to fly an RC plane, and he wasn't able to do it anymore. And that was